This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
A beautifully done Bloody Sunday centenary commemoration on Saturday evening, followed on Sunday by the Tip footballers wearing a replica of that 1920 jersey, winning a Munster title for the first time in 85 years. Then Cavan surprising everybody but themselves by winning Ulster and completing an All-Ireland semi-final lineup identical to the last four in that 1920 championship. Back then, of course, Tip won the All-Ireland eventually when it was finished a couple of years later, before the Dubs went on to rattle off three in a row thereafter. I think most neutrals would probably take that scenario again, would you? But you'll have to give Dublin three of the next four All-Irelands, but you will at least get to watch them lose to Tip just before Christmas this year. So that should be a bit of crack for everyone. Anyway, Welcome to Monday Second Captain's Podcast. Murph, how are you?
Hey, Owen, how are you?
Not too bad. Ken, how are things?
Very well, Owen. How are you?
I just realised I've already written Cavan off against the Dubs, adding further grist to the mill of the likes of... Is it grist to the mill?
Yeah.
Sometimes you say a phrase that you realize has been around forever, but you've never actually used before.
You've never said the word grist without immediately following it on with
to the mill.
Grist to the mill, yeah. Of the likes of World Service member Cahill, who was on to us. Hope yous can muster up at least a mention of Cavan this week, lads.
We'll take that on the chin.
You've got your day in the sun today. You will have to share it with Tip. Murph, sorry, go on.
No, just if Cahill wanted me to mention Cavan, I could mention this story that a fella in a teammate of mine put into the team WhatsApp group last night. My father just reminded me of a story about the 97 Ulster final, the last time Cavan won an Ulster final. Bernard Morris, their hairy-backed centre-back.
Man after my own heart, yeah.
Yeah, Bernard Morris brought the cup to Lacken School and the teacher asked if anyone had any questions for him. One child says, "When are you coming to do our silage?" So there you go. There's a mention for Cavan there, Cahill.
And that's another, Cavan done.
Yeah,
the
there's another story that I got sent to me from a Cavan friend of mine. The guards came into a pub in Cavan Town the morning after the 1997 win. It was 11 a.m. People had been drinking through the night. The guards look around disgusted. Ah, lads, West Coast coolers. All they had left in the whole pub was a case of West Coast coolers because the place had been drunk entirely dry. So there you go. There's two mentions of Cavan. Now we don't have to talk about their football team at all, Owen.
Well, let's give Carl a little bit more of what he wants. He wants those emotions stirred up once again. So here is their leader, their manager, Mickey Graham, speaking to Thomas Kane on BBC.
You got me at a bad time at this moment, trying to gather my thoughts. What, the lads, what can you say? It was just give everything you ask of a team, honesty, guts, determination, belief. While nobody else had it, they had it, and I'm just delighted for them.
The two black card decisions, very frustrated. You could see it in the sideline, remonstrating with the officials. Then you had the chance for goal, which was saved by Sean Patton. Did you feel it was going to be your day?
Yeah, look, we knew coming into the game that we had to be on our game for the whole 75, 80 minutes. And we were happy at halftime where we stood. Used no better than I did. I thought the black cards were harsh. But I thought the lads responded seriously well. And, you know, we had a couple of goal chances there. We could have pushed on. But you know what? It doesn't matter. We got the result. Cavan are Ulster champions. Who cares?
23 years ago, you were part of the panel for the Ulster final victory back in 1997. The county has been ravaged by COVID. You have some of the worst numbers in the country. I know you've spoken about this in the past, but what will today mean for Cavan people?
Words can't describe it. You know, it's just huge. That's all I can say.
And with that, he actually walks off. You often hear managers and players saying words can't describe it, and then they go on for 2 minutes trying to come up with the words.
Yeah.
But it's just I just can't. I think those were the last words he says. I just can't, and then he's gone.
Yeah,
brilliant.
And so he walked out of the frame of the pitch side camera, and then the camera mounted higher up to actually shoot the game picks him up on the field, and he's crying in the arms of, I think it was like a county board official. But it was amazing. It was just so brilliant. I mean, I watched the final on BBC, and it was Mickey Graham, and then a couple of minutes later they had Raymond Galligan, the Cavan goalkeeper and captain, and he was every bit as emotional. It was amazing television. It was such brilliant television, and you couldn't but be absolutely delighted for them. While simultaneously thinking, I kind of wish it wasn't Dublin they were playing in the Ireland semi-final. But hey, listen, we'll get into all that on.
Shout out to Cass, by the way, Kieran Cassidy, co-producer of Where Is George Gibney, for tweeting that interview. That's where we picked that one up. Cass is another proud Cavan man today. Hairy backed? We don't know. We don't know that. I don't have that information offhand. But
Kieran Cassidy, no, not particularly hairy backed. I can tell you that right now.
Andy Moore and Oisín McConville will be on fire today, I'm sure. That's after we talk about Jurgen Klopp, Ken, who was, I'm sure, in chipper form last night after watching his team take care of Leicester in the Premier League. 3-0, Firmino on the score sheet, another goal for Jota. All sunshine and happiness in Klopp's world, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you watched his post-match interview in Sky, you've seen how delighted he was, particularly with Roberto Firmino, his luckless number 9, managing finally to get a goal, and that's actually the note on which he chose to end that interview at Sky, a good upbeat note on which to end.
Everybody thought the same in that moment. He has 3-0, great, and exactly the right goal scorer. We were also happy for him, and he played outstanding again, and so all good.
Well, that was how his interview on Sky ended, but that is actually not how the interview ended, because at that point Jurgen Klopp took a deep breath,
right,
and spent the next 5 minutes attacking Sky and BT. Now, we can't play the entire 5 minutes. I mean, Sky didn't play any of it. We're going to just play a few minutes. Because this is Klopp talking, again, as you mentioned, after the 3-0 win, which was a massive result for his team.
Yeah.
We consider everything that had happened this weekend. You know, Chelsea had won again. Tottenham had a big win against Manchester City and gone top. Leicester obviously started the game ahead of Liverpool, had been one of the form teams in the league. So it was one of those, and of course they had all of these absences. I mean, you know, Van Dijk, Gomez, we know about, but also Henderson, Alexander Arnold was injured in the previous Liverpool game. Salah had a positive coronavirus test. So, you know, missing most of their main players, you could say, against one of the top teams. So then to deliver a performance like that was, I think, a huge
a huge moment for them in the season. You know, it kind of showed the sort of depth of strength that they've got. And you can imagine Klopp was pretty happy. But the question was along the lines of from Jeff Shrees, you know, you talked about how important it was to concentrate. And that was, you know, and at this point, Klopp, literally, you could see him take a big breath and then just start lashing into Sky. As he went, well, you know, I mean, it's very important to control games, especially because we're all running around like so much. You know, you have to control games. I mean, we've spoken so many times about the necessity of changes, by which he meant the 5 substitution rule. You know, and I go so crazy about this. Then he said, you know, because people have been saying, well, hang on a second. You know, you're always going on about 5 substitutions. And yet I noticed that you didn't even make your 3 substitutions. You know, what's going on with that? Klopp's point at that is essentially the problem is that you can't make the changes early and you are hanging back from making your last substitution because you can get these muscle injuries at any moment, as happened with Naby Keita. And then suddenly you're finishing the game with with 9 players. He said 9 yeah. 10 players. So he went on like that for a bit, but he just kind of kept going up and up and up and up. So we'll pick it up here as he's talking about, he's getting annoyed at the idea that whenever he does this, people are always like, oh, well, there's the Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp going on once again about stuff that would be advantageous to Liverpool if it was introduced.
I don't talk about Liverpool. I talk about the football players out there. Yesterday, Piqué, massive knee injury. Today, maybe Saka, I'm not sure, looked like a knee injury, but what I saw from things. He played all 3 games for England in the international break. So, and today's football. And now the people tell us, yeah, then rotate. Who? We have offensive players. We could rotate, yes. The rest are kids. That's how it is. It's all okay. We fight with all we have. But when you not start talking, you will see what happens.
I understand exactly what you're saying. And you don't sound as though you're talking just about Liverpool. Genuinely, you're talking about the welfare of players and other players in the league as well.
Exactly. But people tell me then, I would talk about Liverpool. So that's what they...
The only point I would make, though, Jürgen, is it's not just the broadcasters.
It's a massive problem. Wednesday and Saturday, 12:30, is a broadcast problem and nothing else.
People tell me,
if we want to change that, we need a shareholder meeting. For what? For what? And then you ask for, give us money back. For what? We have 2 teams who play Champions League on Tuesday night and 2 who play Champions League on Wednesday night. Then we have teams who play European League on Thursday night. So what you do, because you pick first the team and then BT starts picking us, we play Wednesday night and we play the next game on 12:30. What are we doing now? We play against Atlanta Bergamo on Wednesday and 12:30 at Brighton. That's an early Christmas present. We will show up there with a shaking. I think about sending the points. That's how it is, because you go there, you lose a game. You can always lose a football game. That's, of course, possible. Be for us as well. That's how it is. But it's the problem. We cannot change 10, 11 positions. It's just not possible, because we cannot only show up. We have to win the football games. We cannot only go there and you wear a red shirt. Nice. It's enough. So, gentlemen, it's exactly how it is and nothing else. Start talking and start making decisions. I know it's not you, but you have to...
I understand. It's not personal. It's a discussion. It's good to hear these things.
Like the relationship with you a lot, really, with all this with Sky. It's not a problem at all.
I think it's more complex, Jürgen. It's not just the broadcasters. It involves a whole lot of people. The clubs who agreed,
we have 4
the
weeks. If somebody tells me again about contracts, then I go really nuts. Because the contracts are made not for a COVID season. We all have to adapt. We adapt. You stand here with a face mask. We adapt to the situation. Would you have thought a year ago you would ever go somewhere with a face mask and have to stand there and we cannot be closer like this? That's the situation. So everything changed. But the contract with the broadcast is still, nope, we said we have this, so we keep this. What? Everything changed. The whole world changed. That's it.
Ooh, too hot for Sky.
Mm. I honestly can't believe that they just cut that out. Like, I mean, you know, in the circumstance, like what he's doing is, I mean, especially the stuff that you hear at the end, like, it's good to hear, says Shreves, as Sky prepared to dump the entire interview. It's not good to hear.
By good to hear, I mean, it's good for me to hear it. Obviously, no one else will ever hear it because, I mean, Jesus Christ, Jürgen.
we're
trying to run a business here, but yeah.
I found it incredible, but of course it aired on, I mean, the way it's done is like the interview is recorded and then is played sort of as live. I mean, that's invariably the way these things are done. I mean, sometimes you can see them record, you know, do a live interview with it. You know, you can see the people in the studio, but usually it's recorded just before and then just played, and you don't usually need to like cut huge swathes of it out as they did there. But like, I can't imagine Klopp's going to be too happy about that. I mean, he makes this big statement, which I'm going to say is obviously he premeditated. I mean, I don't think he necessarily meant to go on for 5 minutes like that, because he obviously then developed his own momentum.
And also because Shreves kept cutting in on him. Shreves kept coming back at him. I thought Shreves did all right there. I mean, he was trying to make the point that it's not just the broadcasters who are involved in this. The clubs have agreed to the current conditions and so on. But yeah, that just kept winding up Klopp even more rather than calming him down or placating him in any way.
Yeah, and so he went on and on and on. But then for them to just sort of ignore it all. I mean, could they defend it on the basis that, well, it went on for too long? Really? I mean, I can remember them playing a 7.5, wasn't it 7.5 minute Jose Mourinho tirade after Chelsea lost to Southampton? Mourinho just ranted for 7 unbroken minutes, not allowing the interviewer time to. But like, they were perfectly content to play that because it was just pure drama. And Mourinho was engaged in the process of tearing Chelsea apart from within in public, as opposed to attacking Sky.
Make journalism and tell the truth.
And I suppose mentioning their commercial competitor, BT. At the same time, but like, I mean, okay, it's ineffective ultimately in suppressing the message, because the fact of them leaving it, you know, and that Barbara Streisand effect. I mean, okay, there's lots of people, I'm sure, who actually casual viewers who won't be aware of it, but it will then sort of filter into the news. Oh, Sky didn't play this, and it goes out on all of these other feeds, and everyone who's on the internet, which is, you know, a lot of people at this stage, will have the opportunity to actually see what he says. And ultimately, it still gets plenty of attention. But I was a bit surprised by it.
Like, what's interesting is, because a couple of weeks ago, they had Gary Neville on talking about sort of a State of the Union address by Gary Neville on the problems besetting football at the moment. And in the middle of it all, he was like, look, this pay-per-view thing, it's nonsense. Scrap it. Gone. Hasn't worked. Finished. Nonsense. Gone. this sort of staccato delivery that he sometimes does, which is really effective.
Soft, flaky.
Yeah. And, you know. So like, that was quite interesting, because that's one of their pundits on their show saying that this pay-per-view thing is a nonsense. So they were okay with that. I mean, that was live, so you could hardly cut it out anyway. But I'm sure they were aware of Gary Neville's views on that matter, and they were okay with having him on to say. I don't know. It's a strange one. Yeah, but do you know what I find funny about all this is Sky are not doing well out of all this, or BT. Like, Sky have had this awful PR around the pay-per-view thing, which wasn't their idea, which seemed to they put it out there. Both Sky and BT sources came out very strongly a few weeks back while the pay-per-view was still going on, and were saying, this isn't good for us, you know? Mm. Like, they're getting bad PR. They're not making money out of it. They're having to find production crews to go around and do these matches, which is stretching them beyond the capabilities that they have in the current climate. And now they're in a situation that the pay-per-view is gone, but they have to watch BBC and Amazon come in and get matches. So I don't know. I don't work for Sky, Ken. But I can see them. I would like to see them answer those questions, actually. I'd like to see the Klopp interview played, and maybe then later in the week, I don't know, Neville and others maybe talk about it in a balanced kind of a way. But it probably doesn't help matters that they they essentially censored it, you know, that they edited the whole thing out.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it would be interesting to see if there are actual beyond what Klopp said at the end, you know, when Klopp was sort of doing his like when Donald Trump impersonates the media when they, you know, they said he acted so unpresidential. Klopp saying at the end, oh, you know, the contract says this, so we keep this. You know, if there is an argument sort of effectively beyond that, like to justify, you know, to counter his argument that, look, everything is different now. All of these contracts were signed in a situation where we assume that this was all taking place between sort of, you know, the second Saturday in August, as opposed to like mid-September, which is when it's actually starting, and all this other stuff that's been crammed in. Like, I mean, there's a football match like every couple of days now. You know what I mean? It is insane.
Yeah. But my point is Sky are making compromises, but they're not the compromises that these compromises don't mean less football gets played or football gets played less. The compromises are they're having to take it on the chin that, for example, the BBC get to show live Premier League matches, you know, which wouldn't be, that wouldn't have been written into any of the original Sky contracts, but it just is the way it's happening at the moment. Yeah. That wouldn't, I mean, Klopp would probably take umbrage with that and go, well, that's, it's still TV companies dictating, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Klopp is, you know, I suppose the five substitute thing could pacify him a little bit. I'm not sure it's within Sky's gift to Grant. I mean, it's not, like, that's up to the clubs to vote on, you know, when Shreves is saying, well, it's not just the Sky problem. Because Klopp was complaining about a few different things. One being that the substitutes, the number of substitutes that are available, and two being the kickoff times. You know, it's the same complaint that Odegaard Solskjaer had a couple of weeks ago, where his team had to play Wednesday night and then Saturday at 12:30 because BT are like, well, we want that game. You know, we want the Man United game. So yeah, he's complaining about a lot of stuff. And I guess one way to Sky would really like the five subs thing to happen, just to take a bit of the pressure off.
Yeah, maybe. Well, this I'll tease up tomorrow's interview in the World Service. We're going to be talking to Melissa Reddy about her book, Believe Us, How Jurgen Klopp Transformed Liverpool into Title Winners. And I'm sure we'll get into the end of the Stephen Kenny video saga, or at least the end of the matter as far as the FAI statement goes that came out over the weekend. But also on the World Service this week, there will be daily episodes of Isolating. I greatly enjoyed, I must say, David's cycle around the Phoenix Park last week. There was one bit in particular that got me thinking. Nobblers!
The Wellington Monument is, yeah, so it's the pointy thing just over there. And it is, so it's big, tall granite obelisk with metal panels on the sides depicting glorious battles, and it is apparently the metal bits are made from the melted down cannons of Napoleon, who Wellington defeated. But much more importantly in my cultural life, it was where people spontaneously gathered after the death of Kurt Cobain. I know, I don't know how it got round.
How can I resist? It's Grunge Week 2020, everybody! Yes! Yes!
What are you?
Yes, guys.
What are you talking about?
That's right, I have bowed to the wishes of the vocal majority of World Service members. You thought it wasn't going to happen, did you? But then David had to tell that amazing story about cycling around Phoenix Park and being reminded of the time that he came to pay his respects at the Wellington Monument for some reason to the late Kurt Cobain. So this year of all years, I think we need to find solace ourselves in the greatest of all Seattle-based musical eras. What do you reckon, Murph? Excited? Ken? Great news? Yeah. This is literal silence here. There's good news, Murph. Come back to me. There's good news for you.
Go on.
You don't even have to hear the clips.
Ah, well, that is good news. I will say that.
The clips get put in after.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just green screen yourself and those and whatever songs you have. Just green screen it. Me and Ken are going back to, you know, LA. We're not going to be sitting in our trailer waiting for this. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I'm just so excited. I'm so happy about this. Life is too short not to do Grunge Week, especially in this year. Another perennial favorite on the World Service, the Christmas sports book slot, which is less divisive. I think most people like the sports book slot. I mean, most people like the Grunge Week as well, of course, I should say. But there are a few haters out there, such as Murphy Ken. But as regard the Christmas sports book, people have been asking. People such as Simon Larrigy has been asking, any chance we could get the slot done early this year? It's already taking weeks to get books delivered online, which is a very, very excellent point, Simon. So yes, we will get that done this week with Sinead O'Carroll and Maliki Clerk. And although I have just realised Mal is one of the fiercest anti-grunge campaigners, so maybe don't tell him he's going to be on during Grunge Week, or he will cancel the book slot, and that will not end well. It is time now to talk about a truly epic GAA weekend.
Modern day coaching. What is it all about? Paralysis by analysis. Infiltrated by a load of spoofers and bluffers. Fellas with earpieces stuck in their ear. Psychologists, Clive Woodward, statisticians, dietitians. And as Mick O'Connell alluded to, God save us.
What a weekend that was. Oisin, how's the form?
Owen, how's things?
Great, great. Looking forward to this chat. Andy, how are you?
Yeah, all's good.
I mean, between the Bloody Sunday commemoration and the two big shocks and the four teams that were playing each other, that were in the 1920 All-Ireland semi-finals, being in the semi-finals again this year, really extraordinary. Can you remember a weekend quite like that one?
No, it was crazy. I think we all tuned in Saturday evening expecting me to put up a fight. It never happened. And then Sunday, I texted one of my mates from the club there who'd be a good football man, and I said, what do you think today? Will it be the four semi-finalists from 100 years ago? And he said, tip of a chance, Cavan of no chance. So I think that's the way we might have expected it, you know, but it was amazing. And to see Joe Reardon, Mickey Graham, Galligan after the games. It was just, it was quite amazing to see such emotion on show yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, we've played one of those clips already. I think we'll play Conal Reardon during this chat, actually, because there's no harm playing a few of these. It was such emotion around the place. Obviously, a lot of emotion, even watching the Bloody Sunday commemoration at Croke Park, O'Sheen. I thought, I have to admit, I was getting quite choked up with the simplicity and the beauty with which Brendan Gleeson read out that narration written by Michael Foley. Just a couple of lines about each victim and the flame being lit. I thought it was really nicely done. I don't know what you made of the whole occasion.
I thought it was very tastefully done. I thought it was great recognition for for the 100 years. My wee boy is doing a project on what happened 100 years ago, and we watched the documentary during the week. And a lot of the details I wouldn't have known either. I would have known a lot of them, but not them all. It felt right from Saturday evening, it felt like a very emotional weekend. And then by the time we got to, yesterday, last night at 6:30, 7 o'clock, everybody seemed to be crying. And it felt a little bit of a sequel to Jerry Maguire for a while, because we sort of have been devoid of emotion. Emotion, I think, is almost sort of frowned upon now, in that if you're letting emotion get in the way of what's going on, as far as analysis or preparing your team or anything like that. And I've always felt, I think I've always said to you guys, that I think there's always a place for it as a standalone. If there's no substance behind it, then it's worthless. But when there's substance behind it, if you want to go on to the Cavan game, I mean, tactically they were perfect, but they also brought a bit.
Well, we might just start with Tip, just seeing as you've set it up in the way you have, because David Power, their manager, said it was an honour to wear that green and white jersey. They obviously wore the replica jersey from 1920, but we left it at that because if we got caught up in the emotion of it all, we might have got caught. So he's actually saying that they didn't really lean on that.
Yeah, no, but I suppose I'm more talking about, after the game and how people, let that bit of emotion pour out.
Yeah.
I think if you go into it in a clinical sort of manner, the jersey alone probably for Tipperary was enough to say, listen, this is what we're playing for, this house is how significant it is. And if all they said was that and left it at that, players know. I mean, they've wore the same jersey for probably 10 years from underage right up to senior, to and then all of a sudden there's a change. People know in that dressing room there's something significant about the game. Everybody's aware of the history because of the lead up to the game. And so he can say there wasn't, emotion maybe didn't play as big a part in it as it did, but it's definitely played some part in it. So but you have to be able to back that up then. If you're bringing that to the table, you have to be able to back it up. And they were able to back it up, and Cork, played a leading role in letting them do that as well.
Yeah, and just on that, lads, I remember last week listening to Sean Kavanagh talking about Mickey Hart and saying he was lucky to inherit a 98 team, but that was Mickey Hart's team, and like what I found with David Power yesterday, Mickey Hart the week before, for the last, when that team in 98 began to retire, the Owen Mulligans, Stephen O'Neills, all them guys started to retire, I thought Hart lost the emotional kind of link to the team, where they trusted him 100%. If you look at the emotional link yesterday between Power, 2011, wasn't he with the minors in 11?
Yeah.
He brings them through. They know exactly the way he wants to play. He's an emotional link with all them players. I think Sweeney said, not a bad way to start, lad, he said in the thing. There's an emotional link between them. There's an emotional link to the jersey. And yes, David Power said, we left the emotion of the 100-year ceremony and all that behind them. But the emotion in around it, they knew that this was their chance to put a decade or 15 years of work to put it onto a field yesterday in a Munster final, and to win that Munster final, which they've craved for 85 years. And I think there was, I agree with Oisin there, I think there was just an element to it. You see, sorry, his name, Fox.
Brian Fox.
You see the way, he's 5'6", lads. You can't underestimate how small this guy is. He's getting in on breaking ball, and when there's a ball there to be won, he won it. Like Maguire tried to take the lead in a lot of attacks, and like you're going to play the clip where Reardon, they just literally feed him the ball for the last 10 minutes. He catches catch after catch, gives them field position. O'Brien and all these guys the same. I just thought there was an awful lot of them, and I thought the emotion of the whole thing really helped Tip and really helped Kevin later on in the day.
Yeah, you've mentioned a few of the players that Tip could depend on in a lot of ways, like the likes of Kevin Fahey, Robbie Kiley, Brian Fox, as you said. O'Riordan was kind of the wild card, but like what they needed, what they absolutely desperately needed, was their two lads up front to be on fire. And when you saw the two, Michael Quinlivan and Conor Sweeney, scoring points from play inside the first 10 or 15 minutes and then tagging on a few more from frees, and you could see even in both of them, they were like, okay, I'm on it here now. If I get the ball into my hands enough, we're going to give ourselves a good chance here. But they absolutely needed the pair of those to be on fire. And once they hit those couple of early points, like after 10 or 15 minutes, I was fully convinced this was going to go down to the last 5 minutes. Like whatever about talking about a shock or whatever in 85 years and all the rest of that, like watching the game after 50 minutes, you said, Tip are actually better than these guys in most lines of the field. And I suppose you can't underestimate the power of your two best forwards scoring early and giving the entire team just like a little boost on the big day where you're like, you know, this could go a million different ways, but if Michael and Conor Sweeney are kicking points, we actually have a massive chance here, Roisin.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to be fair to Quinlivan, he hasn't been shooting a laser. He hasn't been great all year, I didn't think. I think once he kicked the score and he gave the cheeky smile, I thought, you know, as you say, Morph, that's the sign of a player that knows he's on it and knows that things are starting to happen for him, that, you know, the form that he's taken into the game, you know, he's leaving that behind him. And but the space, when you looked at the space that they had, you know, early on, the runners, the pace, the athleticism, you would say that, okay, you know, when David Power looked at Cork, he would expect that first and foremost, this is going to be manic around the middle of the field. And it wasn't really manic around the middle of the field. They were able to breach that midfield sector and get the ball into the two boys. The first ball that went into Conor Sweeney, I'd say he had 6-7 yards on his man, and it was just straight run out for the ball. And I'll be honest, I texted me on my and I said, listen, writing's on the wall here.
it was unbelievable. Like, it was Conor O'Riordan that kicked that ball in the first 2 minutes. And it's the sort of thing you'd see in an under-14 game. You know, that you have a good lad playing full forward, kick the ball into him. And he had, not alone had he 2 or 3 yards on his man behind him, he had 20 yards in front of him. Like, it was like, it wasn't even like it was a hard pass or a brilliant pass. It was literally a straight ball from 60 yards out into the full forward position. And there was no one near him. Like, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. It was crazy. And like, when you consider at that stage that Cork, for the first, 25 minutes of the game, were playing with an extra man, more or less an extra man at the back. And you consider all the space they got, even the one that Sweeney got turned, hooked it over the bar. I mean, like, he had an absolute world of time. That's inside the 14-yard line. That's inside the big parallelogram, you know. And he just, the space and the time he had. So as much as Tipperary, you know, brought something, and they were very, very good, you know, Cork, you know, really disappointing for me.
Yeah, just one thing on that. I think Power deserves an awful lot of credit, because if you look at the way they set up, O'Brien, Casey, Colin Kennedy, Colin Reardon across the middle, Fox sitting in behind them. So you have two really good fellas up front. Like, you have two exceptional players, both played for Ireland, really, really good players. But the key is, how do we get the ball into them? And if you look at the first four scores this scored, there was 3 by Sweeney, 1 by Quinlivan. Two assists come from Robbie Kiley, 1 comes from Fahey, the centre half back, and 1 comes from O'Riordan. It wasn't just, let's get the ball, let's run it up the field. It was run the ball, Sweeney comes on the loop, Kiley gives him the ball, O'Riordan kicks that one into the D. You know, there was thought behind it. It wasn't just, let's just get leave the two boys up there, lump the ball into them. They have really good half back line now, and Kiley, Fahy, yeah. Bill Maher, really good half-back line. Fox sits and waits for them. And then they play four big fellas across the middle of the field, which is going to be very difficult moving forward. And then when you have two brilliant, brilliant players up front, it gives you a chance. But it's how you get the ball into them. I think we seen last week, Murph, with Galway, it was Conroy and Walsh. But it was no kind of system in place. It was just brilliance by the two boys at times that got them into the positions, do you know?
Oh, this is Colin O'Riordan speaking to Damien Lawler, wasn't it, on the Sunday Game Live.
Colin, it's a long way from Sydney. You're back home in Ireland. You're back in the jersey again. What does it mean to you tonight?
Oh, I can't put into words, Demo. Look, it's an emotional day for me. A few weeks ago, I didn't think I'd be here, and just to be able to be out there with the lads and just giving it your all for the sake of Tipperary is just, I can't put into words. It's the best feeling. It's the best feeling I've had in many years, and it just fills me with pride so much, and I get emotional even thinking about it. But to me, it's one of the best days of my life, and yeah, just over the moon.
Just think about all the progress the teams have made over the years, the underage teams you played on, Colin, breaking new ground all the way. To be part of it today, just a huge, huge feeling for you.
Absolutely, Damien, absolutely. Like, we put in stepping stones for Tip for a long time, and obviously I wasn't there for the last few years or came at Sydney or whatever, and look, to come back to the stepping stones these boys have put in for the last 5 years since I've been away. And look, this isn't about me. It's not about Colin O'Riordan trying to come up here and give interviews and that. This is about the boys out here. And to me, it just means so much to be able to put on the Tip jersey, and it's something I'll never ever take for granted, and it's something I respect till the day I die, that I had the opportunity to wear the jersey. And look, it's a massive opportunity for me. And just while I'm talking, I just want to say extremely thankful to Sydney for allowing me to play this game. They were exactly 100% in their rights to say no to me and to refuse me permission to play, but they had no problem. It was John Longmire and all these lads over there. The Sydney Swans are an incredible organisation, and without them giving me the permission, I wouldn't have been able to play. So just on a side note, I just want to give them massive thanks.
Well said, Colin. Go and join with your
teammates. Okay. I love the emotion. That I also find it kind of mad, Andy, that a professional sports team says to a player, yeah, no problem, you go ahead and put your body on the line. I'm sure that there won't be too much intensity. Well, maybe there wasn't enough intensity from Cork as it happens anyway, but I do find it kind of interesting. It's a good thing they did, though. When the game was in the melting pot in the second half, he made two or three just brilliant catches, and obviously the opportunity to take a mark helps matters now when you've got somebody who can do that. But just in general, he provided that kind of leadership that they were looking for.
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant right from the first ball into Sweeney. I think he had three direct assists right through the game, caught lots of ball. His energy, his athleticism is huge around the place. And it, like, if you have O'Brien and you have Casey in around the middle of the field, it just gives them that bit more mobility and extra kind of running. And when Maguire became on top of the game, they looked for a Reardon and he really stood up. But his emotion on the interview, we've witnessed it in our club with the two Handleys, Pearce and Keane, going over to Australia at 18, 19, 20 years of age. And these guys to go over, like, you have to think about it. At 18, I didn't know which way I was turning. I didn't know where I was going. And they go over and make a career, make a life for themselves. It's a huge sacrifice for them, leaving their families, but a huge achievement. And I think yesterday you just seen, I think one of his lines in it was, I'm happier. This is one of the happiest moments of my life. Like, he dreamt about this when he was a kid. He comes back, yes, he gets a great opportunity, but he gets an opportunity, like, he gets the clearance from his club to come back and play. And I just think it was really, really cool to see him talking after the game, to see the kind of temperament he has. I hope he's gone in 2 weeks' time. I hope they bring him back in 2 weeks' time. But he was brilliant yesterday. And I just, even, I love looking at the respect the other players have for a player after a game. And I think the respect all the backroom team had for him, the other players, they knew he wasn't in there to make his own name. I think another one from in the interview was, this is not about me, it's about the fellas who have laid the groundwork the last 5-6 years. And I think you could see that the lads, he didn't want to just come in and be the superstar. He wanted to come in and help Tip achieve what they achieved. He didn't play against Limerick, but he played yesterday, and the difference he made, lads, was incredible.
I'm just wondering how that conversation went. I wonder, was it a conversation where Colin O'Riordan heard what he wanted to hear, And he said to the boys...
Oh, with Sydney, you mean, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I wondered, did he say, listen, lads, you know, is it okay if I play in this early game, you know, when I get home? And they said, well, Colin, if you think that's a good idea, you go ahead and do that.
Great. I think it's a good idea, yeah.
he thought that was him getting the blessing, so it'd be interesting to see. But I was actually talking to Marty about it yesterday, and Marty said that, you know, in his time, that was completely frowned upon. It was just a simple no. And I think, you know, that's the way it's been for some time. But it seems to be a bit of a change. And maybe because of the year that's in it, maybe that's why they actually give him the blessing, you know?
Yeah, and there's, I suppose, a timing issue as well, given that, you know, it's November. You know, what he would have been coming back playing a club game maybe in the, you know, the, whatever about that. Whatever about risking it for a Munster Championship, a club game might be a different deal. I mean, Oisin, we have talked about Cork for many years. I don't think I'm... over-egging it to ask you, is football now doomed in Cork? Like, are you looking at this being the sort of defeat that, like, will end careers? Like, this could put them back years.
Yeah, no, I thought, you know, when they beat Kerry, you know, the most important thing they had to do was they really had to back it up yesterday. And I still think that if you want to go back to mentality for a second, I still think they didn't bring what they brought against Kerry. And I think that's the thing that's going to eat away at them. As far as ability, I thought they were behind the curve a little bit anyway. But I don't know about setting back. I think, you know, this will make them realise that they still have a huge amount of work to do. I think a lot of people in Cork thought, listen, we beat Kerry, you know, we're back. But forgot to realise that, you know, you have to keep backing these things up. One standalone win is not going to be good enough. So, yeah, it'll be a massive setback. But I still think, you know, the Saints have been encouraging. Yesterday will be devastating, but they've got to use that and kick on again. And if anything, maybe it'll make them realise that there's even more work to be done than they've done at first glance.
Andy, let's talk about Cavan. How impressed were you with the coaching job? I mean, how well drilled the team they looked to be, how the players managed to keep their heads in. Well, in one way they didn't, I guess. They got a couple of black cards, but maybe somewhat harshly, but they kept their heads within that context. There was good in-game management, and when it was there to be won, they got the job done. How impressed were you?
Yeah, I thought they were brilliant. They stayed in the obvious. They had 20 minutes of the game down to 14 men. And it, like, you're always looking at teams to learn. It's like what Oisin was saying there about Cork. Can they learn now and kick on, bring it on? You're looking for teams to learn within a game. And I think they lost the first time they got a black card when Killian Brady got sent off, or got black carded. They lose that period 7-1. And the second time, you know, they I think they actually won it. Did they 2-1 or 1-1? It was absolutely brilliant. And I just thought everything they had, like I mentioned a guy there, Killian Brady, I was laughing at him yesterday, and like in a good way, but he was like a crazed man. He was running around, yeah. He was hitting everything. He was like, I kind of half wanted to believe him that he didn't mean to hit Ryan McHugh, but he meant to hit him. Do you know what I'm saying? He deserved his black card probably because he was just wanted to hit everything. It was brilliant to see. And you just had fellas all around the place, Killian Clark, all these guys, and Faulkner, that just wanted to win the game and perform so much. I thought it was an incredible way to see it. And to be honest, lads, when the game got into the melting pot, they simply had more quality. It was them that was creating the goal chances. It was, you know, it was Riley had the goal chance before. And yeah. I think Smith had a goal chance before that. And like we've questioned over the last couple of weeks, that defensive line for Donegal. And we were questioning for when they go up against Dublin. But yesterday, lads, McFadden, Ferry out. Like, if you think about it, McMenamin out, McGraw out. Then three guys started against Mayo last year down in McHale Park. Three of them gone. Neil McGee, another year older. And then you're clutching and you're looking to see who where they're going to go. But on the Cavan side, absolutely brilliant on the line. I think Mickey Graham got it right. And on the Donegal side, I think they got it wrong, lads. Like, during the game, I was just looking. McBrearty was... He wasn't brilliant, but he had two kicked from play. He had... You know, he had four kicked in total. I think he had about six shots. He had two direct assists, and then he had that balloon that he kicked up in the air, which Langan got the score from. Like, he was the guy that was making the difference. And it was like if they had this idea in their head, we'll play Paddy for 50, 55 minutes, and we'll bring him off, and we'll have him ready for Dublin. but they forgot. They literally forgot that. Like, if you think about it, Jamie Brennan didn't score. Murphy got a point from play. The guy that was doing the score and assisting, to take him off in the vital time when Cavan are down to 14 men, when the space is about to come available, when you need your composed players on the pitch. And they take, yes, I'm a huge McPurity fan, as you can see, but like, he yesterday was the guy that was making the difference for Donegal up front. And they took him off. They took off O'Donnell out of their 12 points. That's 12 points on the bench in the end of the game. I just thought, and a great time for Bonner. You know my time for Rochford. Lacey lived with him in college, one of the great mate of mine. But I just think on the line yesterday, got it slightly wrong when the game was in the melting pot, where Cavan got it totally right. Bringing on and off Madden, scores 1-2. George McKiernan, what he gives them, just calm and influence on the ball. Brilliant. Brady running around hitting everything. Do you know, the scores they got, do you know, it was just brilliant to watch. And do you know, fair play to Cavan and best of luck to them.
Yeah, and Oisin, you're talking about a Cavan panel that lost 8 players last winter. Killian Carrick came back in, the other 7 stayed away. 6 of those played in the Ulster final defeat to Donegal last year. Cian Mackey and Conor Moynagh were two of their 3 All-Star nominees over the last 5 or 6 years. Darren McVitie was their best forward last year. Conor Rehill was their best newcomer last year. Like, it's unbelievable what they've done. And whatever about talking about 1997 and winning the 4 games in the Ulster Championship this year, even dealing with that alone, that turnover from last year's team that got to an Ulster final, dealing with that alone is an amazing achievement by Mickey Graham.
It is. And you know what? You know, you never heard Mickey Graham talking about the players who weren't there. Always about the players who were there. Yesterday wasn't just tactically good, it was tactical perfection. Everybody thought, you know, I don't know if you listened to Mickey Hart before the game. Mickey Hart said, listen, they'd be absolutely mad to push up in the kickouts. What did they do? False press. 5 players against 6. And I don't like the Dublin Meath game the other night. Meath put a press on, and Cluxton kicked it over the top to Conor Callaghan on what, 3 occasions?
Yeah.
Almost one after another. Thomas Galligan took up that position on several occasions where Patton likes to go straight over the top. They've seen Langan as the up-and-coming player. They put Killian Brady on him, and Langan spent most of the game up in his own defence. When you consider that from their own kickouts, like anybody who's at the game, anybody who's witnessed Donegal, as soon as Raymond Galligan sets the ball down, all you can hear from the Donegal bench is time, 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 time. They put 9 players into a press. But Galligan was completely unfazed. First keeper I've seen all year. You look at Blaine Hughes for Armagh against him. He just wanted to get the ball away because he felt under that much pressure. There was that much noise coming from the bench. Galligan just took his time, used his experience. Yes, they lost a few, but anything that was there to be fought for in the middle of the field, they were fighting tooth and nail for it. They made Donegal work for everything, and they put them under a huge amount of pressure. The Killian Brady black card, which I personally didn't think was a black card, was a massive shift in the game. You know, Andy talks about the 7-1, but you know, you look at Langan, he started to come into the game. They started, Cavan struggled a little bit in their own kickouts. They were, you know, but the amazing thing for me at that stage was I thought Mickey Graham, right now, you know, what you've got to do is you've got to give them the kickouts and you've got to make it difficult around the middle of the field, or, you know, as they come into the opposing 65. But no, they kept that false press on. Patton was forced to kick into the middle of the field again a couple of times. And, you know, okay, Cavan weren't winning it, but it just shows you, you know, the faith he had in the team first and foremost, but also just that level of ambition that, you know, they had a certain thing in their head and they were going to do that. The Conor Madden one, lads, was comical. Conor, I'd say he set a record yesterday for on and off because he was on as a blood sub twice. Then he come on at half time. Then gets black carded, so he comes off back on again. He never stopped warming up along the sideline just down below us. Comes back on. Every single time he gets the ball in his hands, he thinks one thing, shoot. He never leaves the fifth. He never, you know, ventures back in to do the tackling or anything out there. Once they pass the 45, that's him. His job's done. He goes back in there, and he's obviously the one player that they just say, listen, lad, you just stay where you are, and as soon as you get that ball, have a shot. You know, the last day, when he come on, and the impact he's had, and the impact he had yesterday, and, you know, 1-2, you know, 1-2, and I thought he was poor yesterday. But it just shows you that the collective of all those lads and just that willingness, and Thomas Gallagher just epitomises all that for me. He come on against Monaghan, completely turned the game on its head, and he's done that ever since. And you know what? I think it's because people have this image of him being uncompromising, and, you know, this guy can play football too, lads. You know what I mean? They can play him at full forward. They can play him in the middle of the field. They played him as more or less an orthodox sweeper for the last, 10 minutes of the game. Comes out into the middle of the field for that one ball that you really need to win, and he wins it. And, you know, they just had heroes all over the field. Jared Smith at wing half-back, Luke Fortune, you know, all these guys, you know, they run the bench consistently, and the bench gives them something every day. Donegal, you know, were found wanting again 3 years in a row. Tyrone 2018, Mayo last year, and Cavan this year, and that is all to do with pressure. As soon as you put pressure, like, they look, how good did they look, lads, when, you know, when Killian Brady was off? How easy were they able to kick scores? How, you know, how fluent was their movement? But as soon as you put them under pressure, they buckled.
Just coming in on that, lads, everything they did yesterday was kind of unconventional. So if you look at J.L. Smith, for example, he misses that goal chance and you think, head down, that's a big loss. Next point he gets, he kicks bomb, like a beautiful score. There's a score apiece then each, and then he does a beautiful 1-2 with Riley to get them, I think, to put them 12-11 up, which was just, or make them 11-all. It was just another person. It was like Mickey Graham had the drilled. Lads, things are going to go wrong here. Don't worry. If you miss a shot, up you get, where you go. Like, if you see the score, if you see the score to put it up from Mushin Kiernan, that one from James Smith, it was just like, lads, take your shots. Let's see how it goes. Take your shots. As Ushin says, put on the false press, put them over under huge pressure in the middle of the field, and let's see how they cope with it. And Donegal didn't cope with it, but everything that was thrown at Cavan yesterday, they coped with. And, you know, at the end, possibly could have won by more.
Ushin Kiernan this time 2 years ago was getting chemotherapy, lads. You know, like, you know, it's what he's done and the way he's turned that around has been just truly unbelievable. And that score, like, you're right, Andy, that score that he got, like, you know what I mean, just to have the balls, you know, to take that shot on, first and foremost, but the execution of it was just perfect.
You've both mentioned the false press there. Maybe just explain that really briefly, because I think it might be quite relevant when it comes to talking about Cavan and Dublin playing in Ireland semi-final. But,
well, the false press basically is that when Patton looks out, he has this image, right, these boys are pressing my kick out hard, whereas they're not pressing it just as hard as you think they are. So what they're doing is they're walking in the zone, so they have two of the full forward line, and they have one of the wing half forwards who is pushing in but also keeping an eye on what's going on back over his shoulder. So you've got 5v6, but the goalkeeper hasn't enough confidence to pick somebody out because they feel as if they could be turned over. Remember, you know, Patton still has those images from getting turned over against Tyrone the first day a couple of times. So that's what I mean by a false press. That gives Cavan an opportunity to cover the big long one over the top, the flick from Murphy, which they love. So that's basically what the false press is. I would say false press in Armagh is a lot easier than if you're going to play it against the Dubs in Croke Park, because you're just talking about just that extra little bit of space. You're talking about, you know, you're talking about obviously a top class goalkeeper who, like, if he makes a mistake, isn't probably going to get that perturbed about it. But I think that just the dimensions of the football pitch, first and foremost, Armagh is a lot smaller than Croke Park.
But I just remember, lads, back in the league game against Mayo, and obviously the games against Mayo kind of stand out a bit. Donegal and Mayo destroyed when Patton was going long. And Mayo let them have the second half kick out. I think Mayo played against the wind. And Patton decided to go short. Now, he didn't go short yesterday, but he did that little half kick or that three-quarter kick. But I think you have huge men you know, like put it 60 yards. You know, you're still going into the depth thing. And I think Donegal kind of fell for where they went three quarters or they went to that half kick. And it just allows Cavan to fill up that central channel. You know, the left Morgan and these guys out of the wing. Oshin, you were at it. You can talk about this a bit more. Left them out of the wings. And they were just running into bodies every time they went into the centre. And I think it all kind of stemmed from Patton's kick out, where I think the real strength of Donegal was to get the ball up the field where they were in position and let them fight from up there, because they're huge big men, good fellas in around the break. And I think they kind of just fell for what Cavan gave to them yesterday.
Last one on that, Oshin, because I do just want to
just exactly what Andy said about you know the Cavan want them to do that, and that's exactly what they did. Cavan dictated to Donegal yesterday, and there's nothing give me a sense in the past couple of weeks that was ever going to happen, that Donegal would be dictated to, but that's exactly what happened.
Well, no, that's it, and that takes me to my point. At the risk of piling more disrespect on Cavan, because I know they feel they've got a lot of that despite their run through Ulster this year, is this result bad news for anybody who wants Dublin knocked out in the semi-final stage? I might put that to you, Andy, because, I'm sure Mayo fans, if they can get past Tip, would be happy enough for Dublin to get knocked out. You know, would Donegal at their best have been a much tougher proposition than Cavan at their best against this Dublin team?
Ah, yeah. If Donegal play Cavan on a regular, you know, to play them 10 times, like they're getting in the high numbers there of defeating Donegal, or defeating Cavan. They're possibly, like, and Cavan are gone down to Division 3, guys. Donegal are Division 1. Donegal are overall, not this morning, but overall, they're a better team than Cavan overall. But on a given day, anything can happen. On an Ulster final, we've seen it before, anything can happen. Whoever kind of wants more. And Cavan wanted every dirty ball, but we were hoping that it was a Donegal Dublin final, not out of disrespect for Cavan, but just that someone might put it up to Dublin. And to me, it's not going to happen. That Dublin team on Saturday evening, yes, Meath were very, very poor. And we can talk about their kick-out press and stuff like that in a minute or two. But they were very poor. But Dublin were exceptional, lads. And the speed of the game, when it's going to go to Croke Park, the size of the pitch, they're used to playing against this a defensive style. Yes, Cavan will cause them some difficulty going the other way. But Dublin will just churn it out, and it could be by 10 or 12, or it could be by 6 or 7. But either way, Dublin will churn it out and get to a final. Donegal, we were hoping with their athleticism, with their Langans, with their Thompsons and McBrearty coming back in, you know, we were hoping that they might cause Dublin difficulty. I had question marks about would they anyway, just because their defensive setup. But yeah, listen, that's gone now, and it's Cavan, and you would expect Dublin to win fairly easily in the semi-final.
What pitch are you talking about, Andy?
Which are we going to Navan? Are we? Are we going to Navan?
We have to go somewhere. Dubs can't play at home.
Well, this is it, though. I know, Murph, you want to chime in on that, because you've I've been talking to you already this morning. You're keen to see this match take place somewhere else.
Well, I mean, if Cavan, I think Cavan should be given the choice. You know, I think if Cavan feel like they've qualified for an Ireland semi final, and if they want to play in Croke Park, then they should be given the choice. But I mean, the choice is like 100% you get hammered, or 80% you get hammered. If you choose to play in Croke Park, you're going to get hammered by Dublin.
But, sorry, that's purely because of the size of the pitch or Dublin's familiarity with Croke Park? Because obviously the crowd, etc., isn't the factor this time.
All of that. I mean, like, if you take what Meath did to Dublin in Parnell Park and what Dublin did to Meath in Croke Park. And I mean, it's absolutely not a fair comparison. You know, one's a league game, the other is like what teams prepare for and play for all year.
Use the Westmeath game more.
Yeah, even then, even at that. Like, and again, like, Westmeath had to play Dublin in Portlaoise for a reason absolutely passing understanding. That's the Leinster Council, and we might get onto that later on. But the fact of the matter is, there is a once-in-a-lifetime chance this year to actually even up the score when it comes to the Ireland semi-final stage. Declan Kyne, the Galway fullback of the last couple of years, said this in a press conference 3 or 4 years ago. Why are we playing Ireland semi-finals in Dublin's home ground? At the time, I kind of raised an eyebrow or two, but it is fair enough. The Ireland final has to be played in Croke Park, absolutely fine. But we're dealing with a team now that's well on the way to doing what to the All-Ireland Championship what Well, they're not well on the way to it, but you have to start looking for the next 5 or 6 years. And if the All-Ireland Championship turns into what the Leinster Championship is now, that's a big, big, big problem, because the Leinster Championship is depressing. And I can't have been the only one watching Tipperary and Cavan yesterday absolutely joining in their joy and their ecstasy and all the rest, at the same time thinking, oh my God, like, what would Dublin do to both of these teams? And that's a big... It used to be a Leinster Championship problem. Now it's everyone's problem, because Dublin, obviously, given their brilliance, their shadow hangs over everything that goes on in the football championship. This should be the best football championship of all time when you look at what's happened. It has been exceptional entertainment so far, but you can't do that. I mean, I've seen a couple of people tweeting, you know, geez, if you take Dublin out of it, this is a brilliant championship. But I mean, you know, you can't take out the monster in the room from when you're considering, you know, the interior decor. You know,
just to take it back to the stadium thing, is this just, you know, pie in the sky podcast chat on a Monday afternoon, or do you think there's any chance of actually the semi-final being moved if Cavan requested to play on a more neutral venue?
Well, you're asking me to go into sort of GA politicking there, but there is no obstacle to playing this game somewhere other than Croke Park, if that's the question you're asking. There's absolutely no obstacle whatsoever. And if you're saying, I don't know what the arguments are. Maybe the argument is you should play it on the best pitch, the best surface. We can find a surface that isn't Dublin's home ground, you know? We absolutely can. And particularly when you're dealing with COVID and the amount of hassle it takes to travel from your own county into to go anywhere in the country at the moment. The idea that you would say to the 5-in-a-row champions, you don't have to worry about that. We'll play an All-Ireland semi-final in your home ground with no fans. I mean, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. It's only fair given the fact that there are no fans. There's nothing to think about other than the integrity of the competition. So if that's the only concern, it's not even a decision to be made. This game can't be played in Croke Park.
Oisín, you're on board with this as well, are you? This campaign to stop the Dubs ruining football.
I just think there's no stumbling block for it this year. I mean, like, you know, we said this, and there was you know, Cavan fans and Dublin fans heading for Croke Park in 2 weeks. We wouldn't have a leg to stand on, let's be honest about it, because the first thing is safety, numbers, the capacity. Let's be fair, let's give everybody a chance to go, the kids, blah, blah, blah. But there is none of that this year. So I imagine the guy who is organising this stuff in Croke Park has got one eye open all day. He's looking at his phone going, please, please, please don't ring. Don't ring. Please don't ring. Because you know what? Because then what they have to do is, you know, all I've heard all year on is integrity, 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 integrity of the competition, blah, blah. So, you know, for the integrity of the competition, I mean, they can't say no. How could they say no? What would be the reasons for them to say no? This game can be played anywhere. I suggest Newry. That's really handy for me. It's only 25 minutes away. But you know, it'd be an hour for Cavan, an hour-ish, an hour and 10 minutes, and the same for Dublin. So I can't understand why there wouldn't be a hunger, you know, to play this outside of Croke Park. It stands to reason for me.
Is there anything that Cavan can learn in a football sense, wherever the match takes place, from Meade's non-performance, Andy? I mean, I saw Joe Brody tweeted saying, Kildare lads sitting at home thinking, thank fuck, which I don't know how true that is, but, you know, it does show where the Leinster Championship is at the moment. I know Dublin were incredible, and they, you know, it was their first really sort of massive statement performance in the Championship under Desi Farrell, but that said, Meade didn't exactly make it difficult for them.
No, it was very poor. I think just on the kick-out situation, like the three goals, I don't know how much they're connected, but the three goals came from Cluxton's kick-outs. And I think just little basic things like that, their own kick-out and on Cluxton's kick-out, I think they just got it wrong, we did. Oisín was on about a half press for Cavan. Meade decided to go with a full press in their forward division, but then played kind of man-to-man, but just left their backs back. So it left a huge gap between their half-back line and their own 45, which Conn O'Callaghan just came in time and time again, caught that ball. You can see it happening, moving forward. Like, what Dublin do is brilliant. They Khan gets the ball there. He could have easily given it to Fenton. He doesn't. He gives it to Scully, who's ahead of Fenton. So then it allows Fenton to drive through the gap then, which other teams would have given the simpler pass. And it's just, it, and they were brilliant. McDade at a halfback, Joe, I think he assisted a goal, a couple of points. You know, they just seem to keep churning out these players. Couldn't mean they've done any different. They could have made it tighter. They could have made it closer. I expected that they would have made it closer, but unfortunately, on Saturday night, you were looking at a bleak outlook at definitely the Leinster Championship, and I was thinking the All-Ireland Championship. Sunday lifted our spirits, but Saturday night was a bit depressing, to be honest with you. Dublin are a machine, and I think the key to Dublin is, I don't know if you've seen the four pictures of the, or the three pictures of the captains lifting the cups yesterday, but Cluxton was just there. It's just business as usual. He just, I don't think he really, I think he really is the small smile, but he's the catalyst to all this, lads. He's the leader. He keeps doing his stuff. He keeps pushing the boundaries of what's able to be done from a goalkeeper position. And everyone else just follows that. He's the perfect guy for them. But yes, the huge advantages, lads. And like I'd echo, just going back on the last conversation, I'd echo what Oisin is saying. You know, now is the chance to move this game. Will Cavan win the game? I'm not going to say they're not, because this is such a crazy year, but if they move it, it gives them a chance. Do you know, you get wet weather like you had in Healy Park up in the National League. Do you know, all of a sudden the game becomes tighter and Dublin are in the fight. And I think it'd make a good spectacle of it, because if it goes to Croke Park, I don't think it'd be as bad as the Meath game, but I expect it to be an easy Dublin win.
Just one more thing on the kickouts, Andy. Like, what do you think Meath could have done? If you're talking about giving up the kickout, and like if the half press, as explained there by Oisin, I mean, you're still pretty much giving up the kickout if you're asking five Meath forwards to defend six Dublin defenders, because Cluxton will find the sixth defender. Like he'll work the overload. He'll get away with the minimum of fuss. I'm just, you know, because you're watching it on Saturday evening, and you know, as a Galway man, I'm like, this could be Galway. You know, if you're from any county apart from Mayo, Kerry, maybe that's it. You're watching it going, Meath are terrible. They're a disgrace. You know, they're an embarrassment to the jersey, all the rest of this, while simultaneously thinking, yeah, that could actually be us, though.
Yeah, you do one or the other, Murph. You either go right press, and what I mean about right press, you have to... Remember last year when Dublin played against Kerry and it was 14 men, and basically you're seeing Cluxton out marking and Tommy Walsh, and the backs were pushed on, so you're compressed the space. So you have to be... If you're going full-on zonal press or man-to-man press, you have to be willing to push your guys up ahead of their men to the limits of where Cluxton can kick the ball. Yes, then you can see a Jack McCaffrey goal like what he did against Kerry last year. But to a certain extent, Kerry did that quite well the first day. When Dublin were down to 14 men the second day, they did it quite well. What Meath did is they stayed man-to-man. So if Paddy Small was staying in on the full forward line and Dean Rock, their men were stick tight to them. The half-back line was the same, which just left you... Once Fenton went into that gap between centre-half-back and right-half-back, the midfield went in, and then those huge gaps in between. So what you need then, sorry now for what you need.
No,
then
no,
is,
please. Yeah.
You need to bring Keoghan and McEntee and these guys. You need to bring them up 15 yards so that they're cutting off that middle space, which Meade never did. They left huge gaps between the 2.45s, and Dublin just exploited it all day, every day.
Did Mayo do that? Did Mayo do that, Andy, in 16 and 17? Because I don't think so.
No, we didn't do a press. What we did was we did a zonal kind of a zonal system where the six guys marked the six zones and you filled up the most dangerous zone. So if just say Shamey Shea went in and kicked a point, someone went out and filled his zone. So you left two then in the full forward line and moved your way back. So we took the most dangerous zones, which we did quite well. But you have to commit to something. You can't do half of something.
Yeah.
The other thing, because Cluxton will just eat you up. Like, if you can see it again, lads, if you just look at Fenton's movement, right? This is where they're dealing with. He knew that he was going to be tracked. He knew you can't leave Fenton free, right? So he knew he was going to be tracked. So he goes between the centre half and the right half back. And then his man goes with him, which just leaves that pocket. And Cluxton just kept delivering the ball into that pocket, delivering it in. And then when Meade closed off the pocket, He went short to the right half back, or the right half or left half back position, and then they just came into the central channel that way. So they're always trying to get that central channel. You just can't give it up.
All right, lads, I think we'll wrap it up there. It's been a great chat this morning. I will say that probably some of our listeners will be disappointed, Oisin, that you haven't used this week to finally tie up your Garry Kasparov analogy from last week. It involved Mike Tyson. Nobody really knew what was going on. But
well, if you can picture this, right, Owen, we have a wee girl at home and we're not getting a lot of sleep. when I did get dozing off last week, all I could picture was Garry Kasparov on one side of the table and Mike Tyson on the other. Now, Garry Kasparov would have a good idea about tactically how he's going to beat Mike Tyson, and Mike Tyson would have a fair idea how he was going to beat Garry Kasparov, and that would involve a lot of punches to his head. And that's really the image I was thinking when I was thinking about Armagh, because tactically Armagh had a great idea, but they just kept getting punched in the face. So anybody who has been waiting on that for the last 7 days with bated breath, there you go.
Perfect. Usher and Andy, fantastic. Thanks a million.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks, lads.
Now that you have your cool about you and you're calmed down at this point, I want you to answer this question. How could that man go 24 rounds with you and only two with the heavyweight champion of the world?
Because George Foreman is not as good of a fighter, scientific as I am, but I admit he's stronger and he hit harder. I'm not a hard puncher. I'm not known for being a hard puncher.
Something else, isn't he, Ken? This Murph character. Trying to derail the Dubs 6 in a row by sending us off to some godforsaken part of the country to play an All-Ireland semi-final, rather than the spiritual home of Gaelic football, Croke Park. As I call it, headquarters.
I'm looking out at that spiritual home right now, Owen. It's mighty iron jaws stretching towards the sky, asking, what's it going to be next week? I like the yellow and green ones, but, you know, I like all different colored ones. The yellow and green ones are probably my favorite, but the green and yellow ones are also good. Mm-hmm. And there's the wine colored ones. You know, I sometimes put them aside, but, you know, I will eat them if they turn up here, you know.
Have you mentioned the green and red ones?
The green and red ones are just, you know, they are abundant. The green and red ones have been plentiful. They're all tasty, is what I'm saying. Those iron jaws will close and masticate whatever is sent up.
It's put in front of them.
From around the country. So, Cavan, we look forward to welcoming you to D3.
A reminder, Andy and Usheen are available every week to our World Service members. Jamie Wall made his punditry debut on the hurling last week and was equally brilliant. He's going to be on again in a couple of days' time ahead of the All-Ireland semi-finals next weekend. We've got Melissa Reddy tomorrow on the Jurgen Klopp book, which is very, very timely indeed. Sports Book of the Year slot well earlier than usual because of the aforementioned potential delays in getting stuff delivered online, all that kind of stuff. So we'll do that one later in this week. And the real reason to sign up for a fiver a month plus VAT on secondcaptains.com. It's grunge week. Killian, give them a taster, please. Just a snippet to tease all the grunge-loving Monday-only listeners. Anything by Nirvana in honour of Doddles reminiscing about the day he gathered with others in the Phoenix Park to share...
Including me, actually. I was
on the death of Kurt Cobain. You were at the Wellington Monument as well.
I was indeed.
Wow.
To pay tribute.
Your hatred of Grunge Week was almost enough for you not to share that information with me, but you've come good just before I wrap the show. I suppose you didn't know David O'Doherty at the time, so
no,
that would be
no,
a stupid question. So what did you just... How do people know that that was the place to go before the days of mobile phones and so on?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, I suppose we had telephone phones.
Yeah, but once one person has gone to the Wellington Monument, they haven't gotten in touch with their mates before leaving, then nobody knows.
I don't know. How did people manage to organise anything back in the days before about 1997? Somewhere other like? It happened. There was a lot of pimply youth standing around. Many of them wearing sort of multicoloured woolen ponchos, which like my, including me.
Yeah.
Playing guitars, you know, singing Come As You Are, all that kind of stuff. It was a poignant scene. Just youth coming together to share support. I do remember getting a bit bored after a while, but I've got a very short attention span for anything like that, really. Maybe looking back, it's actually social anxiety. There's too many people here. I need to get away. And so that's my memories of the day.
It's beautiful memories, Gannon. It's an honour to finally have you on board for Grunge Week 2020. Sorry, Murph, you're in the minority this year. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen, and thank you, Gannon.
Thanks, Murph. Ken. Thank you, Owen.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.